This is News in Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, Obama backs Hillary and alleged threats from bin Laden. Joining us today to discuss these topics and more in New York, Michael Myers, Executive Director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition. Callie Crossley joins us. She's a social and cultural commentator on the television show Beat the Press in Boston. She's at member station WGBH. And from Savannah, Georgia, George Curry, editor-in-chief of the National Newspaper Publishers Association News Service. Thank you all for joining us. Before we get into this, these topics, the one thing I wanted to ask all of you about, and Callie, let me start with you. When you hear the debate, as we just heard, between these two women, and you think about what the nation has been debating about the possibility of change, the sway of the court with Alito's nomination, that debate between Ms. Gardner and Ms. Martel Gator really proves how important this nomination will ultimately be, doesn't it?
Absolutely. If people haven't figured that out, they should have by now. And in fact, just looking at the recent vote where John Roberts lined up as well would be a leading indicator of how the court is going toward. And so Alito's presence on the court will just make the turn to the right even more firm.
Michael Myers, let me ask you, people tend to lend themselves to exaggeration sometimes when the debating punditry goes on between those, quote, in the know in terms of how the court may be swayed. How close do you believe, if you follow the history of Alito, if confirmed, that we could truly see the abolishment, not the change, not the tweaking, but the abolishment of abortion?
You will not have the abolition of abortion. You just won't have it. If you had the abolition of abortion, you would have the possibility of back alley underground abortions and people going other and rich people going elsewhere to get abortions and poor people having having to do wires and things like that. And that's not going to happen. Now, all we have to say, and this is not an exaggeration, the Alito nomination was decided with the presidential election and with the election of people in Congress. And without a filibuster from the Democrats and Republicans who are in favor of privacy and the women's right to choose, then Alito gets on. That's no exaggeration.
George Curry, let me ask you this before we move on, and that's the idea of the debate you heard between the two women and something that I asked during that discussion. And that's whether the United States can ever get past this question of pro-life, pro-choice, if you can't even agree upon when life begins.
Yeah, that is a problem. And also, you know, the language is so important. You know, and it's not that anybody is for abortion. I think it is just for some people is the choice of a woman to have an abortion or not have an abortion. And a lot of these decisions are being made by men on the Supreme Court. We do have a problem, a fundamental problem with that. There's very strong emotional feelings about this. I think the legal status of abortion will change. I think Roe v. Wade will be overturned. But as Mike said, it won't stop people from having abortions.
All right.
If I could just add one last thing.
Real quick for me, Callie.
That is, though, I think that Mike is correct that I don't know that Roe v. Wade will be overturned, but I do believe that the subsequent rulings will eat away at the strength of it so that in the end you'll be forced into those back alleys again.
All right. Let's turn our attention to an audio tape purported to be Osama bin Laden, aired on Al Jazeera and certainly now played across the world. We hear now the man said to be bin Laden talking about preparation for yet another attack on American soil. And what was interesting here, Michael Myers, you also heard bin Laden suggesting that it is time to find a truce, literally offering a truce to the United States that he said would be fair and long term so we can build Iraq and Afghanistan. But essentially what he wants is the United States out of Iraq, out of Afghanistan. Many people see this as a PR ploy, if indeed this is bin Laden.
Well, it's not the first time that Osama bin Laden has offered a truce. He offered a truce in Europe as well. And after that, when they rejected it, he had the bombings in London. But bin Laden's tape evoked the usual robotic response from the White House spokesman McClellan. We don't negotiate with terrorists. Meantime, we are supposed to believe that we're doing everything possible to have the Christian Science Monitor reporter released. Meantime, there's been no change, even after the new Osama bin Laden threat, no change in the alert status in the United States, not even in New York City, where we are on a perpetual yellow-orange alert. Not yellow, not orange, but yellow-orange. They run into each other. The only thing we need to do now is to get a tape to Osama bin Laden. Somehow somebody's got to get a tape to him and let him know that with violence, with terrorism, with striking against the United States or any nation, it only strengthens and emboldens Bush.
Yeah, Callie, here's the interesting portion of what I found and what you, as Michael has said, we see these tapes periodically every 6 to 8 months. They seem to find their way to the top. But the suggestion that the United States is ripe for another attack, that security measures are not impenetrable now.
Well, I
and never have been since 9/11, frankly.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the concern, is that we're not ready. But some Osama bin Laden experts have said this morning that one of the things that is typical is the warning comes first. And if you recall that he offered the truce to Europe, as Michael pointed out, and then right after that, then we see, you know, what happened in Spain and what happened in London. And so it's, for me, a little scary to hear this and think, okay, well, now this is exactly the pattern that he had before. And let's point out that he hasn't really surfaced. His second in command has been talking through the tapes. This we haven't heard from him for a year. So I think it's significant to me, and that this would seem to increase or should increase our concern about what the possibilities are for attack.
Mm-hmm. George?
Well, certainly. I mean, some have been missing. You remember all the hoopla that Bush had before? He wanted data alive, and we're going to get him and all that stuff, and we haven't touched him. Clearly, he is playing on our fears. We have a lot of vulnerable areas, and it's cause for alarm. I agree that it is applauded for him to control Afghanistan and Iraq, but I just don't see that happening.
Here's the interesting portion of when these tapes do resurface or surface. As George Curry just suggested, Michael Myers, the idea of Osama bin Laden being public enemy number one certainly would be something that the White House says, but I heard a guy in the barbershop liken it to O.J. Simpson looking for his ex-wife's, quote, killer. The idea of how much is the United States really looking for this man?
Well, everyone says that everyone in power needs a devil. And Osama bin Laden, of course, is in fact the devil in the details. But if it weren't Osama bin Laden, it would be somebody else who comes to succeed Osama bin Laden. Terrorism is, as they say, is not an individual thing. It is a mass ideology. It is a network. It is a cabal. So the issue is, how do you fight effectively the war on terror when you don't negotiate? How do you fight effectively the war on terror when you can't even find the people who are your quote-unquote public enemies number one? So I think that the even the president and all the officials in the United States say that another strike in the United States is inevitable. With all the security measures they've taken, they keep warning us that another strike in the United States is inevitable. And we're still not ready. We're making cutbacks in Homeland Security and in FEMA.
All right. I think it's also significant that bin Laden commented directly about Bush and about the American people's opposition to the war. I mean, he's striking right at the heart of some of our insecurities in not only about being attacked again, but about our feelings about what are we doing in that war and what does that mean? What statement are we making about the quote-unquote war on terrorism?
All right,
Clinton's talking about plantation politics.
Well, thank you very much, Michael, for the segue. We talked about this earlier in the week, and that's the idea that Hillary Clinton, at a Martin Luther King Jr. celebration held under the roof of Al Sharpton's organization, when speaking to the guests, she described the House of Representatives as a plantation. And now we're seeing, after some backlash from some media organizations and other politicians, who chastise her for using and evoking the word plantation with a majority black audience as just a ploy to raise the ire of those in the audience. We are starting to hear defense of Ms. Clinton's use of that word from African-American politicians. Barack Obama said that he felt her choice of words referred to the consolidation of power, end quote, in Washington that squeezes out voters. Harold Ford also suggested that the idea was not necessarily racial, but more ideological in terms of the juxtaposition of the word plantation. Mm-hmm. George Curry, do you buy that? George, you with us? George was joining us via phone today, so we may have lost that connection. We'll get that back in just a moment. Michael Myers, let me turn to you and suggest whether or not you buy that. We are seeing now that seems to be the roadmap that African-American politicians
are taking. I don't buy it because I think it's defending the indefensible. Plantation politics is about house Negroes, field Negroes, overseers, 40 lashes. So, no, I don't know what Hillary Clinton was talking about, and neither does she. And I don't understand how Obama, Senator Obama, can even defend the indefensible. This was bizarre, nonsensical, baloney, contemptible showboating. It's interesting because Hillary changed the subject from her own pathetic record as a United States senator, speaking before a black audience, and she had to be accountable to them, to talking about a chamber of the Congress in which she's not even a member. So this was, and it's appropriate that she was standing next to Al Sharpton, this was on Hillary's part, the antics of buffoonery and racial rhetoric. I condemn it.
All right, but let me ask this, Callie, of you. Had this been Al Sharpton, had this been someone black, had it been at an African-American church or under the roof of a black organization, as is Reverend Sharpton's, would we have heard this kind of furor from some?
Well, we wouldn't probably have heard the furor because that's the kind of rhetoric that Al Sharpton would use. And guess what? Michael is right about that. It's appropriate for him to use it. I thought it was interesting to have plantation politics described as a consolidation of power. What are we talking about? The only people, the only other people there were the slaves. They didn't have any voice. There was no voice, period. There wasn't even about lack of input, which is how it's being described now.
Well, that's part of, let me read another quote. Let me read another quote from the senator, and that's part of what his suggestion is here. He also said, quote, "The ordinary voter and even members of Congress," meaning the minority members, "who aren't in the majority party don't have much input."
But
if you're going to use plantation, there was no input. That's that's why I resent the use. You know, if you're going to use it, then mean it and stick by it and make everybody understand that's what you mean. And as a matter of fact, when she used it, she then paused and said, "You know what I mean."
Right.
So I either stand up for it and make it very clear that what I am saying really is exactly what I'm saying. Don't back away and then say, well, what we really meant was a consolidation of power and where everybody's voice isn't in, blah, blah, blah.
And why not on Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday, the celebration thereof, not talk about high poverty, living wages, the lousy schools, drugs, broken down pro-criminal justice system, prison, housing segregation, discrimination, voter defeatism and disenfranchisement, racial reconciliation. Why not talk about the real
Michael,
issues?
That wasn't all of what she talked about.
But I don't have a problem, Michael, with her talking about this. I just want it to be clear about it. I want her to stand by what she meant. She was
stand
using
by your
that
man.
Opportunity. That
stand
was,
by your
she
issues.
Was using the, that's exactly right. Her, using the opportunity in that audience to say that, and she meant what she said. And so then don't come out of the audience and try to change it to mean something else.
Right.
I have
right.
no
me,
problem with her talking about the issue.
Let me move
of
us on to, to something else that a lot of people are talking about, and it evoked the image of the brawl at the Palace last season, the Detroit Pistons and the Indiana Pacers. This time, the New York Knickerbockers were engaged in a very tight game, quite frankly, with the Chicago Bulls. And we saw Antonio Davis, a man of good reputation in the NBA. As a matter of fact, he is on the board of the Players Association, enter the stands as he thought he saw his wife being accosted. Jumped over the scorer's table, went over, made sure that she was all right, and was quickly led back to the court. He has subsequently been suspended for five games. And now is possibly going to be sued by the fan that Davis thought was accosting his wife, a 22-year-old Michael Axelrod of Chicago. Callie, when you take a look at this, the NBA, particularly coming out of the brawl at the Palace, as the media has called it, has made it quite clear that NBA players should never, never, never underline enter the stands under no circumstance. But yet there are many men who will tell you that it is your instinct to protect your family, men and women, quite frankly. And if you see something like that, you're going to enter the stands. The NBA has suggested that they were lenient with just a 5-game suspension. Where do you fall on this?
Well, I think that the coach said it best. He said, you know, come on, that was his wife. What are you going to do? I think he went up to see what was going on, and if you're black and been in some sporting events, you know stuff can be said and stuff can be done. And so I got to say, from just an emotional standpoint, I understand his going into the stands. Now, from his job perspective, I don't think he was thinking about that at the moment. He was really on just reacting from a personal basis. And so I think this is going to be maybe an exception to the rule. I don't know whether the fan was drunk or not. Saying that somebody was, maybe there's some standard there for him to sue. But I think he's on kind of shaky ground.
The fan suggests that he did not partake in libation.
Well, I did.
Alcoholic
I did not,
or otherwise at the game. Go ahead.
I did not buy the excuse of running up into the stands. I think it's that machismo. That has to be rejected outright. It's just juvenile behavior.
So, Michael, if you saw someone that you thought was accosting your loved one, would you stay away?
Well, reportedly, his wife was taking care of herself because, according to Michael Axelrod, she was attacking him. That he wasn't attacking
her. Right. That wasn't my question to you. You saw someone that you thought was accosting your family, would you stay away?
Well, the rule is that you stay out of the stands. You have security in the stands, and
My question to you, Michael, with about 30 seconds is, if you saw someone.
All right, if I saw someone accosting.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think it was a read of suspension given what he was, but I think that's a natural reaction. I think the NBA overreacted because it's not the same thing as going out and starting a fight.
All right, Michael, real quick, you got 10 seconds.
I would not have run into the stands. There's a regulation against running into the stands because you make a bad situation worse. And my wife would take care of herself.
All right, well, I'm going to tell you, I don't care about any regulation. You mess with my folk, we coming into the stands, me and a bunch of folks. So.
Oh, all right. You're going to pay the money.
Yeah, I'm going to pay the money, but you're going to pay for it too. All right, folks, thank you so much. Greatly appreciate it. Next up on News and Notes, author Taylor Brantz joins us to discuss his revealing look at Martin Luther King Jr., Remember Nonviolence, people, the civil rights leader as a man in the public eye, the problems in his private life, and his place in history.